Hey, Robin, welcome to our next episode of the Good Kids, Better World podcast, talking about things that all relate to raising good kids who will make a better world.
Yep, that's what this podcast is all about, trying to raise and care for good kids. But we should probably say what we mean by good kids, right?
Good idea. Always worth repeating. We say a good kid speaks up, speaks out, and notices injustice. A good kid cares about their family, their school, their friends, and their community. A good kid is learning to be anti-racist, feminist, inclusive of all genders, identities, sexual orientations, and abilities. And above all, a good kid is striving to make a better world. And as always, we're going to use some guiding principles and values to frame it. Today's episode is going to be about peace.
Awesome. And you're telling us a story about that, right?
Yeah. When I was thinking about this idea of peace, I was really struggling at first to think of a story about it because, you know, peace, it's like this big nebulous concept. Like,
ooh, nebulous. That's a good word.
You know what I mean, right? Like, what really is peace, you know? But then I remembered I had been asked a while back a similar question. Someone asked me about a time when I felt really peaceful. It was the end of one of the most incredible weekends of my life. I had flown out to Las Vegas with my husband because he was actually a contestant on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And that was like one of the coolest experiences ever.
That sounds so cool. We're going to have to do a whole nother episode just about that, I think.
Just about that. And yeah. we can link the YouTube of him on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Oh, 100%.
So the weekend was this like perfect sort of arc of emotions, right? So we spend a whole day traveling. So we're sort of physically exhausted from that. And then the next day he was, you know, backstage the whole time. And I was with one of our friends just waiting in just intense anticipation, just like this excitement and anxiety. And it was just this very physical kind of experience. And then he was on and he won. And it was just this huge emotional release. And then we went out to an amazing dinner, like the most expensive meal we have ever eaten, ever, ever, ever with our friends. And it was just absolutely phenomenal. So then the next day, you know, we're all exhausted. We're all jet lagged. We've all been up way too late, ate way too much meat and drank way too much. And so we're just completely exhausted. And our friend manages to score a free cabana at the pool. And so here's my perfectly peaceful moment. I am sitting in this cabana, like tired, but happy. And I just felt perfectly, perfectly peaceful. And when I reflect on that, I try to think about like, well, what made that so perfectly peaceful for me? And I think what it was this like combination of things that just happened to all fit that moment, right? So there I was doing the exact amount of physical exertion that is what I needed, which is I was awake, but I wasn't moving.
Just going to say, is it none? Is none? The
yep, none is correct. None is correct. Sometimes I lifted my head a little to look up and it was hot, but I was like in the shade and it was the desert. So it was this beautiful dry heat and I was just perfectly comfortable and I'm like lounging and I'm by myself and, you know, I'm an introvert. So that's really wonderful. And I had my headphones in, so I wasn't distracted by all the chaos going around me, but I could see the beautiful pool. But even more so on deeper reflection, I realized I wasn't worried. And I am a worrier. Like I can put a lot of worriers to shame. And in case anyone thinks I'm saying warrior, I am not. I'm saying worrier as in anxiety.
You're a warrior. You're a worry warrior.
In this case, I'm saying I'm a worrier. And I wasn't worried in that moment at all. My kids were at home with the very best person they could be if it's not with one of their parents, which is my mom. There's no one I trust more in the world. And I had no worries about what was happening there. I didn't worry about their safety. I didn't worry about their happiness. I didn't worry about their hunger. I didn't worry about anything. I knew everything was fine. And I could just be in this moment feeling this way right now. And one of the lessons I learned from looking back on this moment of peace, right, is that I think we kind of talk about peace, whether it's an internal peace or like global peace or however we're using the word, as this sort of end result. Like one day we will achieve peace and then it will be peace. Ta-da, done. It's kind of like how we talk about happiness like that. Like one day I'll be happy. I'll just find happiness and then I'll just be happy. And then there will be no more not happy.
When's that going to be? I'm excited for that day.
Never.
Oh, okay. All right.
Awesome. As it turns out, peace, I think, is like happiness. It's this experience, but that's all it is. It's a fleeting experience. We have that experience and then we have another experience. And so the goal shouldn't be to sort of achieve peace because we're never going to get to that goal. The goal should be to work towards as many experiences of peace as we can and to bring that to ourselves and to others.
That's really actually really beautiful, Anna. I also struggle with that. Like, when am I going to be quote unquote better? Like, when am I just going to feel good all the time and not be stressed out? And this is a really great story in terms of helping us to remember that, like, you know, we're not looking for perfection. We're not striving even for our kids to be perfectly quote unquote good kids. Like we're trying to do the best we can so that we can have the best outcome with all the bumps and stumbles along the way. It's all, exactly. Yeah. So we actually have a really great guest joining us today. I'm so excited. And she's going to talk about peace and mindfulness. But before we welcome her, you know what time it is, right?
It's time to play.
Yes, it is. It sure is time to play. Okay, so for this game, we're going to play a version of the old game show $25,000 Pyramid, which is sort of like taboo, except there's no taboo word. I'm going to try to get you to say a specific word or phrase or whatever by giving you clues that don't include any part of that word.
Okay, fun. So now my husband was on a game show, so now I get to be on a game show. See? For like a minute, is that what's going
to
happen?
You get to be, it's a minute and it's going to be a really fun minute. You're going to love it.
Okay, so
the words are all going to be somehow related to peace or calm, but like maybe very vaguely, like you might not actually understand the connection, but in my weird brain, they make sense. Let's see how many you can get in a minute. Are you ready?
Okay,
here we go.
Okay,
this is a band. It used to have Neil Young in it, but it doesn't anymore. It didn't. And then it did. I can't remember. But anyway, three people in this band. One of them was had a baby with Melissa Etheridge helped Melissa Etheridge have a baby.
Nash, Steel,
yeah.
No.
You're good. I'm gonna count that one. Okay, next one. This is something you give to a baby when they're really stressed out and they want to be sucking on something. So you give
pacifier.
This. Yes. Okay, good. This is something you can sometimes put in your hair when it's super curly or kinky and you want it to be a little more straight.
Serum.
Yeah, it is a serum.
Conditioner.
But what's it called? No. Okay. Next one.
Relax.
Yes. That's it. Okay. Next one. This is a kind of soap, but it's also a bird that signifies peace.
Dove.
Yes. Okay. Yes. This is a band, a heavy metal, like hair band from the 80s. Like not loud, but Quiet Riot. That's what that
Quiet
was.
Riot.
The first one was Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I'm like, I know that there's a band that has Nash in it.
You got it. And then you finally got Relaxer. So that's good. Okay, cool. Nice job.
Okay, I just want to remind everyone about how we're using themes and values in this podcast. We build our episodes around a Jewish value that embodies the lessons and ideals we want to transfer to our kids, and we frame them in a Jewish way because we are both Jewish. But we all know that values are universal, and the value of peace is a basic human value. So whether you're using the Hebrew word for it, shalom, in this case, or not, that doesn't really matter.
So before we welcome our guest, can you actually explain a little bit more about shalom?
Yeah, I'd love to. So in Hebrew, shalom is a word we use to say hello and goodbye, and also to mean peace, which is what it literally means. And what's really interesting about this word that means peace is that the root that it comes from, shalem, means whole, W-H-O-L-E, whole, like wholeness. And so we can think about peace in relationship to wholeness, that it comes from when we can bring peace to the whole world and also have a sense of wholeness within ourselves and in our communities.
Our guest today is Rachel North, who is a licensed social worker, a certified yogi, and a mom of two small kids. It also feels important to mention that Rachel was the first kid I ever babysat when I was 13 and she was two. So Rachel, welcome to the Good Kids, Better World podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, Rachel. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here.
So, Rachel, I know you now to be an incredibly centered and mindful person. You're raising two really small kids and you're working full time, and yet you always have this real sense of like peace about you. So can you tell us a little about your history, like your path to get where you are today?
Sure. So I think I might start by kind of sharing openly that I do not always feel at peace and I do not always feel grounded and mindful. And that's sort of like one of the cornerstones of mindfulness generally is that it's a practice. It's not something that we like get to and we achieve, like I've done it, check. It's something that we kind of can practice doing all day, every day. And it's taken, you know, I'm certainly not in a place where I feel like I'm done with my work. I imagine that I won't ever be. But I feel like I've come a long way. I was an English major at Penn State and taught English for a few years, middle and high school level, and then transitioned into doing social work sometime after that, maybe 3 years after that. And in between my transition from English teacher to social worker, I was doing a lot of kind of self-exploration, figuring it out. What am I going to do for my life? What am I going to do for my career? And it was in that time that I was practicing yoga the most. So from about 2010 on. And one thing that I sort of have come upon in doing yoga and thinking a lot about mindfulness now in my clinical practice is that yoga does not always like equal mindfulness, and mindfulness doesn't always equal yoga. So the practices can be totally separate, they can also happen at the same time. So like you might be doing a yoga class and do what I did for many years, which is like consider it an athletic endeavor, and be thinking about like all kinds of different things while you're doing it and have a completely not mindful experience. Or you could be quietly sitting and breathing and have a much richer experience of mindfulness. So in terms of, you know, I know that part of this podcast is about inclusivity, and I know we'll get to that, but, you know, we don't have to be physically doing anything specific to be doing a mindfulness exercise. And I use mindfulness all day, every day as a part of the work that I do. I specialize in trauma, and a lot of what we focus on is staying in our bodies and staying grounded and using mindfulness and grounding tools as sort of a way to do that.
So we talk about peace as something we can bring to the world and trying to create peace, encourage kindness, all those kinds of things. How do you find peace within yourself and within your family so that you can help bring it to the world?
Mm-hmm. I like to think a lot about mindfulness as something that I can do literally at every moment of the day. And I think about more so grounding myself into my own body than I do think about mindfulness as like a concept. So if we're to take mindfulness at a lot of the times we sort of frame it around like this existential experience, you know, we're kind of like sitting on a cushion and, you know, there's candles and it's twinkle lights and all that stuff. And we have to be creating that environment in order to access the experience of doing a mindfulness exercise. And I really prefer to think about mindfulness as getting back into my body, because when we're feeling out of sorts, dysregulated, frustrated, whatever, our mind sort of like is launched off into a different realm and we exit the body. So the way back into feeling like ourselves, back into the moment, to feel like our fullest, most whole self is getting back into, you know, where we are physically in the moment. So the things that I like to do on my own are deep breathing exercises. I do a lot of that all day, every day, in between clients, in between transitions from work to being with my kids, to being with my partner, to going back to work, you know, so kind of giving myself endpoints or bookends for those transitions is really helpful to me to kind of not feel like I'm getting ping-ponged around all day long. And I think helping my kids understand that, you know, a peaceful world starts from us going into the world as our whole selves, you know, when, you know, one kind of like interesting factoid is that when we're feeling really dysregulated and agitated, our IQ drops like 30 points. So if we're really frustrated and we're really having a hard time, we literally cannot think straight. And we use that as a colloquialism all the time. And we say things like that all the time. But when we're really activated, we cannot access the cognitive brain. So if we're wanting to be able to solve problems with people and have conversations with people and work on it, you know, as a team, or even just work with our partners functionally, you know, we can't really do that if we're at a 10. We got to be at least at 5.
Makes total sense, because it's like you can't, you know, when you're sort of out of, you know, out of your mind a little bit, you're, it's like you can't remember how to make dinner. Like, yes. I feel like that happens to me. Like, I can't, I don't know how, I can't remember how to dial the phone. Like,
yes.
Like, and it's true. It just like pulls you out of it.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Really interesting.
Yeah. We do a lot of specific grounding exercises together. And truthfully, some of it is, you know, it's always what they need in the moment that they need it. And it also is very helpful to me to be doing that with them. So, you know, one of the things that that works really well together, you know, for us to attune to one another is to be doing a mindfulness activity together. Mm-hmm. So when we're both breathing together and we're both, you know, kind of like doing our deep breathing, or if I'm guiding them through like a 5-4-3-2-1 exercise, you know, we're building attunement and we're building a relationship together, you know? So in terms of another thing, another kind of like specific technique that I like to use is something called tapping, which there's like a huge whole, you know, separate study outside of EMDR self-tapping, which is what I do specifically. But just a quick one that feels really good is like we use the pads of our fingers and we tap parts of our face up here, underneath the eyes, above the upper lip, below the lower lip, collarbone, et cetera. So we kind of work through hitting on specific touch points in the body that are soothing to the central nervous system. So
does that do like the grounding also, like bringing you back into your body also?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So like big picture, when you're doing mindfulness or grounding work, the idea is that you want to be in the body. This is something that another maybe like factoid that I find really interesting. And honestly, I could talk about this all day. So it might sound tangential for a moment, but I think this stuff is really cool. So the vagus nerve is a giant nerve that runs through the entire body. That's a big part of the central nervous system. It's a huge part of our functioning, and it's part of what gets activated when that fight, flight, freeze mode turns on in the mind, that like reptilian brain that does all the activating of the system to get us into that fight, flight mode. Mm-hmm. And the vagus nerve touches every organ in the body. So when we are feeling agitated and activated and we feel it in our stomach, that's actually happening. We actually have like a nervous, a nerve that is touching on different parts of the body that's making us feel somatically a certain way. So, you know, when we think about how to feel better in a moment of anxiety, oftentimes we're told like, oh, just change your mind about it, you know, or like think a different way. Or, you know, well, what, maybe, you know, oh, that's not a big deal, right? Just calm down. And literally our whole body is telling us otherwise, because it's trying to get us out of there, right? It's trying to activate us to like avoid the thing that's making us feel anxious or uncomfortable. And one of the things when we learn about the vagus nerve is that we can do something that are like direct antidotes to that activation, which is called vagal toning. And there's all kinds of like exercises and, you know, there's whole workbooks. So you can learn all different kinds of ways to tone your vagus nerve or cool it down, calm it down. And one of those things. I feel like
that's something you can say. Tone your vagus.
Tone your vagus.
Like, is it like another way to tell your kids? Out?
Yes.
Tone exactly. your vagus.
Yeah, it's funny because I think about that a lot. Like instead of go sit in the corner, like go tone your vagus nerve. But one of the things is humming, which is really interesting. So, you know, when a mom is holding a baby, you know, we often are humming to the baby and we don't think about how the humming is actually impacting us. So again, it's one of those sort of like symbiotic moments where I'm feeling it, you're feeling it, we're attuning to one another and everyone's feeling at peace because there's actually something physical that's happening in the body that's slowing us down.
So on this podcast, we talk about raising the kinds of kids who feel prepared to make a better world. Mm-hmm. And we know that that work can be hard and overwhelming. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what kind of mindfulness work you do with your own kids. Maybe you can tell us how old your kids are just so we can get a sense of that and how you help them sort of find and keep a sense of peace. And then how is mindful work with kids different than what you do with adults? Like how are kids sort of different than adults in that way?
Yeah. To answer your first question, with my own kids, you know, I like to really kind of like hone in on using mindfulness techniques during periods of transition, because that's when kids are generally a little bit more activated. And that's where we see like blow ups happen or frustration happen when we're going from one thing to another. So my kids, Luke is 3 and Joni is 2. And so, you know, that it might be perceived that that's like too young for stuff like this, but it's actually a great age for stuff like this because emotionally they are just like hypercharged animals all the time. And that, you know, reptilian brain is exactly what we're trying to sort of like tune, I guess we could say, you know, if we're thinking about like a little kid with the vagus nerve, the little kid's vagus nerve is like, all day long, right? And so we want to help them understand their own bodies and that what's happening for them, their frustrations, they're feeling it and their, you know, knees are buckling and their fists are clenched for real reasons. You know, it's not just that they're like being too and it's terrible. It's that it's actually hard for them. That like they're having feelings and physical sensations that don't make sense to them. So we want to kind of like help them understand that by getting them to shift their focus back into the body. Like when we're getting ready for bedtime, we're transitioning to sort of like going from dinner time, total chaos, spaghetti all over the room. And we're transitioning to like bath and bedtime. So I can talk about bath time first, because actually that's a pretty fun one too. And if we're thinking about like the physical sensation that's happening and the soothing that naturally happens in a warm bath, we can really like help kids attune to that experience. So, you know, we're in the bath, we're playing with bubbles, whatever. And we might say, what does it feel like in your belly right now? Mm-hmm. You know, what does it feel like in your chest right now? Like, what do the bubbles feel like in your hands? And helping them really attune to their own bodies so that they're not just sort of like conceptually calming down. What does that mean to a little kid anyway? Like, what do they don't know what that means, but we're helping them sort of feel the sensation of, oh, I just went from being really active to really slowing down. And now like I can feel that in my belly. I can feel that like my legs feel relaxed. So doesn't it feel good? Does it feel good to like let your legs just rest? Because you've been running all day long. Does it feel good to let your legs rest? What does that feel like? And kind of help them attune to their own physical experience. Bedtime is another time where like helping my son Luke to slow down is a bit of a challenge, like it is with most 3-year-olds. And so one of the things that we do is walk through this 5-4-3-2-1 exercise together. So we'll start with 5 things around the room that you can see, and he'll name for me, like, I see my picture and I see my curtains and I see, you know, whatever else, my dinosaur and Elmo and whatever.
Right.
And we take a deep breath. And then we move on to 4 things that you can hear. What do I hear? I hear you, mama, and I hear me, mama, and I hear the fan, and I hear, you know, whatever. And then we've attuned to hearing, and then we take another deep breath. And then 3 things that you can touch. What are their textures? 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste. And so even if there's nothing to smell, Luke's still going through the process of trying to smell something, right? So it's like, taking a second, inhaling, and that's a good thing.
I have to applaud you for having a house where there's nothing to smell sometimes. I remember having a three-year-old and there was always something to smell, dude.
That's funny. It's a fun thing for us to do together. It's a way for him to tap into his own body. And it helps him to settle down and really understand what the experience of settling down means. So then we can reflect together. Like, and then they have a skill, right? They have a set of tools to help them understand, this is my experience when I'm activated. This is my experience when I'm slow. I can actually get myself here whenever I'm ready to do that or whenever I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of a cornerstone of the experience of internal peace, mm-hmm. right? An internal slowing, an internal kind of consciousness and steadiness. And that's what we want our kids to bring into the world, right? We want them in their bodies, slow, able to self-soothe so that when they're engaged with other people, we're not in a state of activation or fear or a reactivity.
Yeah. That's a really good one too for older kids. Like even, you know, you're doing it with mm-hmm. your three-year-old, and I can mm-hmm. imagine my 12-year-old doing that with himself when he yeah. starts to feel anxious, which mm-hmm. is, you know, pretty often as a middle yeah. schooler.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. With adults, we might incorporate some other more like intensive strategies if the activation is bigger. So, or like more intense. So for a teenager, you know, like you mentioned, you know, Asher sort of like having these moments in middle school where it's really intense. And so one of the things, there's an acronym for something for grounding exercises or soothing exercises called TIPT. So T-I-P-P. One, the T is tipping the temperature of the body. The I is for intense cardiovascular exercise, only for like 10 minutes or so, just jumping up and down or whatever. P is for paced breathing, and the other P is for progressive muscle relaxation. So the tipping the temperature of the body is one of my favorite things to do. That can literally be sticking your head in a freezer, which I do way more often than one should, but it feels great. And it really helps a lot because again, if we're thinking about the body and the vagus nerve and the internal system being charged, that's literally what's happening. There's heat, there's friction, there's intensity that's coming from an internal body space. So if we stick our face in the freezer and we cool down, we can then access cognitive brain a little bit differently and feel more soothed, calm, at peace. So, you know, taking cool washcloth, putting that on the forehead. The temples in the forehead are really sensitive to cooling. So just sticking it right there for a second and giving yourself a minute to kind of slow down and cool the system can be really helpful. The intense cardiovascular exercise is really just for the purpose of feeling the heart rate increase and then letting it drop. So again, feeling that like the intensity and then the slowing can be cooling for the whole system. Mm-hmm. The progressive muscle relaxation is basically starting from head, working to the toes and squeezing major muscle groups. Again, the tension and the release is the thing that helps to soothe the physical system.
Yeah, that's really interesting. My daughter and I, before the pandemic, took a class. It was actually offered through her school district, which is amazing. That was a parent and child mindfulness class. It was for third through fifth graders. And one of the things I found most interesting was that we would go and they would split the parents and the kids. So the parent for most of the class, and the parents went to a room and we learned different meditation techniques mm-hmm. and they brought somebody in who had a lot of expertise in meditation. She taught mm-hmm. us lots of different techniques and we mm-hmm. sort of got to know each other over the course of a few weeks mm-hmm. and the kids practiced mindful walking. They did mm-hmm. music where they were learning to keep the beat with one another. And they were doing mm-hmm. all kinds of different activities where they were really using their bodies mm-hmm. and their minds at the same time and learning mm-hmm. to pay close attention to themselves and one another. And when we left, the parents were like, we were all so calm, you know, we had been just breathing and quiet and the kids were energized.
Yeah.
But not in this activated way. It was this very mm-hmm. like pure childhood kind of joyful experience, but they were happy and energetic, mm-hmm. and they were like skipping, and it was really something beautiful, and it really helped me understand that peace maybe means something different for children than mm-hmm. adults. We shouldn't put our idea of peacefulness onto them. We should allow them to find that for themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that. What you describe, like the kids sort of like joyfully skipping around, we might think about that as just like an alertness,
yeah.
right? Just kind of an awareness of our surroundings and an awareness of our bodies and awareness of like the greater world. I'm reading this book called How to Do Nothing. It's by Jenny Odell. And one of the things that she talks about is this idea of bird watching, which she wishes would be returned to bird noticing, because you really are listening at more than you are watching. And I'm with that. So she talks about that as being like a really great example of a moment where you're just sitting and listening, and the whole, you know, sometimes people try to get to know each bird language and try to sort of understand who's saying what, but really just the act of listening and discerning between different sounds can be so soothing and such a calming, peaceful experience. So I do that with my kids a lot too, and they love doing that. Like they wish for that, you know, can we go outside and let's go outside and listen to the birds, you know, and we don't know what we're listening for or like who's saying what or whatever. And that's fine. You know, it's not about being an expert. It's just about noticing.
The value of shalom or peace comes from the same root word for whole, which we talked about earlier, and it speaks to that idea of inclusion and including everyone, because when we leave others out, we can't find peace. So I was wondering if there are any suggestions or modifications you have for helping adults and kids with different abilities participate in some of the mindfulness exercises that you talked about earlier.
I think, you know, a lot of the mindfulness exercises that I talked about today are not necessarily physically active, and so can naturally be very inclusive just by nature in terms of differing physical abilities. But when we talk about sort of like neurotypical versus neuroatypical kids, and maybe some of the sensory stuff is not going to feel great depending on what the kid's needs are. And so sometimes the absence of sensory experiences can be part of what is important for mindfulness too. So, you know, sitting with a child who maybe has some auditory sensitivity in quiet. And then there's also really great resources for kids with different physical abilities and great modifications for yoga practices that are, you know, widely available. So we're not necessarily meditating or doing mindfulness work to get good at mindfulness work. We're doing it to get good at life and to have an experience of a life that feels peaceful and grounding and happy, right? So it's not necessarily about like the image of being the type of person that does that. Anybody can do, anybody can breathe, right? Anybody can sit and take a couple of deep breaths. There's a group, there's an organization called the Institute for Creative Mindfulness. And I was watching a YouTube video with one of the people that runs that institute, Dr. Marich, and she has a friend from India named Malika, who was educated in the United States and spent a lot of time here. And yoga wasn't a huge part of her life prior to coming to the US. And then she went back to India and did some deeper yogic training there. And the topic of the YouTube video was cultural appropriation of yoga and sort of like what we've done with all of it in Western culture. And the most hilarious piece of information that I've ever learned is that namaste colloquially in India means like hello. So there's all these white people in yoga classes going namaste. And she talks about this moment when she heard that at the end of like her first yoga class in the US, and she started cracking up to herself because she was certain everyone else was going to start laughing, because it's basically like a bunch of people going hello, which is hilarious. So, you know, like we really don't know what we're doing half the time. And it's really not about being a certain way or going to a certain yoga studio or like, you know, it's funny. She also spoke to sort of like the tightness of the clothing that you're supposed to wear in yoga, and like, which is completely antithetical to how it actually goes in India, where everyone's wearing like loose, breathy clothing, mm-hmm. which you're supposed to be able to actually move and feel comfortable, and not be thinking about what you have on.
That's so great. Thank you so much. I feel like I learned so much today. I mean,
great.
Was it great?
It was really awesome.
was so great. That was incredible. Okay. This is the part where we challenge each other to try something this week, and we ask our listeners to do it too. And before we get to this week's commitment, first, we have an email from one of our listeners who wrote in with her commitment from a past episode.
Okay, so this email comes from Saskia after she listened to our episode on respect. And I think she's talking about that notion of catching kids being good that Dr. Messam mentioned. So Saskia writes, quote, "I am making a commitment to honor my children's report cards that are coming out this week, to look for the good grades and the improvement before I let my eyes wander over to a grade that wasn't what I was expecting."
I love that. I think it's so easy to look out for the flaws, be it in, you know, the paint on the wall or the kids' grades or whatever it is. And when we instead look for what's good, we can really raise up what's good, and it encourages our kids to try to do more good in the world.
And Saskia, if you're listening now, how did that commitment go? Did it have any implications or play out in any way you want to share? Let us know. So for this week, we're going to ask everyone to commit to finding just a single moment of peace. And for me, I'm going to commit to finding this moment or moments before I go to sleep. My New Year's resolution this year was to put down my phone and read before bed instead of playing on my phone until the very last second, until I couldn't keep my eyes open. And I actually kept that up for a few months, but I'm not doing that anymore, unfortunately. So I'm going to commit to taking a little bit of time that's just sort of quiet, no reading, no podcasts, no phone before bed. Like maybe I'll even do one of the things that Rachel talked about in terms of grounding myself in my body.
Yeah. And it's been quite a while for me since I've practiced meditation regularly, and I'm going to commit to one morning this week, because I don't think I can commit to every morning. It's really incredible when you give yourself even just 2-3 minutes time to do breathing, how long that carries through your day.
That's great. And for our listeners, what commitment can you make? We'd love to hear about it. So send us a voice memo at goodkidsbetterworld@gmail.com. Tweet us or tag us on Facebook at Good Kids Better World. You can also send us an email. It doesn't have to be a voice memo, just like Saskia did.
Rachel, thank you so much for being on the podcast today and sharing your stories with us. It was incredible.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
And thank you for listening and joining us on our journey to raise good kids who will make a better world. If you like the show, please tell your friends. You can subscribe to our podcast on our website or wherever you get your podcasts. Please also leave us a review to help more people find us. You can join the conversation on our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/goodkidsbetterworld. And please visit our website for show notes and links at goodkidsbetterworld.com.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.